Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 186, episode 3 of The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. It is Wednesday, May 26, 2021. My name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Getting Vaccinated Makes Me Feel Good. Getting Vaccinated Makes Me All Right. That is courtesy of Christy Yamaguchi Maine and Dr. Feel Good, one of the first singles that I ever bought when I got into my heavy metal phase, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Is Miles Gray saying,
cold brew comes in a can, Kirkland signature house brand, open the can, I really love that sound. Substitute while Jack's away, got Shrek 2 for you today, get the AV card and hit play.
Ooh. Anyway, we're moving to the country. Going to eat a lot of peaches. Thanks to Hank Scipio for that Presidents of the United States of America inspired 8KA, because I think that was, you're pivoting off that tweet I was talking about yesterday, where you know an elder millennial if you just hit him with the first part of
peaches come from a can.
And then
I don't
just
know
see
that.
Where people go with that. You don't know that one.
Uh-uh.
You, wait, hold on.
I don't know. Peaches come in a can? I might be too old.
You know, but you remember the Presidents of the United States of America.
Did they do
Lump?
Lump? Yeah, yes. I know Lump. I did. I think I was out after Lump, and like when they would pop up on MTV, I was like, oh, it's the
like
Lump
I'm off
guys.
This.
The Lump was a catchy song that was almost like weaponized catchy. Like it was so catchy that it was like could have been developed by the CIA along with Winds of Change to just like
just
infect us. Yeah.
And then,
America
they teamed
dumb.
Up with Weird Al for Gump. He's Gump. He's Gump.
He's Gump.
He's Gump.
He's Gump.
I mean, yeah.
He's
malleable.
On a bench. I have no idea how that song goes. Miles, we are thrilled and fortunate to be joined in our third seat by one of the very faces on Mount Zeitmore, the mountain featuring the faces of our fan favorite Daily Zeitgeist guest that's being built in my garage out of Legos and Play-Doh and spit. He is the host of the podcast, The Worst Idea of All Time, in which he watched Grown Ups 2, Sex and the City 2, once a week for a year, Till Death Do Us Blart, which is going to be going on for the rest of his life, I believe. Once a year, he will be watching Paul Blart 2 until he expires. He is the hilarious stand-up comedian who you've probably seen making fun of American accents on his Comedy Central
special.
Yeah, what
the fuck?
The fuck is up with that, bro? He is the brilliant and talented Guy Montgomery! Hey. What's up?
Oh, wow. It's all true. I just think you guys talk funny. Obviously not to you, but right. to me.
What's the funnest sound Americans make?
You're always like, oh, I don't know, man.
Oh,
because the thing I love about Kiwi accent is saying like when chips kind of becomes chups.
Oh,
any of that arge that, you know, that sort of Australian Kiwi sort of sound. Yeah, those are my favorites, but I guess it's just our, oh.
Yeah, we swap a lot of I's for U's.
Yeah.
We don't even know we're doing it. And when we do it, no one down here polices it. We all just sort of, we know what each other is saying.
You get it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't sound odd to the it's Kiwi actually, ear, it turns
I
out.
I hadn't thought about it, but without traveling and our borders being closed, there's been a lot less sort of teasing about our hilarious cadence.
Right.
And, you know, we've all been striding around the country talking confidently. And then I get an email that says, you want to come on the Daily Zeitgeist? And I say, sure, that sounds nice. I'm sure that won't be damaging for my self-esteem.
Yeah.
Right out
and
the
here
gate.
Here we are.
Bang.
We've had enough of your confident speaking.
Hey,
confident
hey sick
Kiwi
deck
accent.
You built out here.
Nice cock.
What? Wow.
That's why people get New Zealanders to say nice dick.
Oh, right.
The belief is that we're describing a penis.
So it's so penis obsessed as a people.
Yeah.
that's all Americans.
Wait,
out the middleman.
Guy, were you joking or not? You're saying like tourists come and clown your accents on your land or not your land, but you know, where your people settled.
Australians
that's audacious.
Mostly. Australians are like, there are high school bullies. They're like, are Australia to Canada.
Oh, right. So like, so it is kind of true, like that relationship that they showed in Flight of the Conchords.
Yes. They love to ruffle our hair and tell us it's all okay. And it was all okay.
Keitha comes over.
Yeah, yeah. Before they ruffled our hair, it was fine.
Oh, man. Well, it's so good to have you back on the Daily Zeitgeist. We are going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, just a few of the things we're talking about. We're going to talk about the right finally taking a stand against anti-Semitism. Where'd that come from? We're going to talk about teaching American history accurately, being a plot from the devil, and, you know, how the Catholic Church is ghost busting that shit. We'll talk about the Olympics. The Japanese people do not want them there. And we'll talk about why they're still happening. We'll talk about fans being back at sporting events, at the movie theaters. So we'll talk about that plenty more. But first, Guy, you know, we like to ask our guest what's something from your search history.
Oh, yeah. You guys love asking your guests that.
Yeah, we love it.
You know.
I was doing this last night before I went to bed. And one of the most recent ones is horse idioms. I was writing a joke about horses, and then I realized there are so many horse idioms. I thought I could try and go on a run. And so I was just looking at a list of idioms about horses.
Lead a horse to water. Don't look it in the mouth when you get it as a gift.
Don't look a gift horse in the mouth?
Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. But did they just make up the word gift horse, or is that a thing?
I actually could not trace the etymology of that. And, you know, it's a shame because the mouth is traditionally the most beautiful and detailed part of the gift horse.
Yes. Yeah. Got to look at those chompers.
Hold your horses.
Yes.
You know? They only live to be about 20 years and they'll be gone before you know it.
So hold them close.
Yeah.
As they drift off to sleep, standing up.
Yeah. I actually didn't wind up using pretty much any of them, but I'm up to my gills with horse idioms.
Up to your mane in them.
Yeah, yeah. Mane would have been better than gills.
Yeah, whatever. I like horses. I'm actually waiting for you to complete this joke, guy, because just knowing your just mastery of words and your just delivery, I'm just excited to hear you're writing a joke that is about just getting deep on horse idioms.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Were there too many horse idioms that you couldn't fit them all and you didn't want to beat a dead horse?
I mean, I don't.
Come on, Jack. Quit horsing around. We're trying to figure out what his process is.
Okay. I see the roof train's leaving the station.
Without you?
Yeah, without me. The one that I zeroed in on was actually, and one day I might post a clip online, was about straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah. Mm. Obsessed with horses.
Yeah. What the fuck is
I
that?
I say,
even?
We got to shut up. This gossiping horse trotting around town.
These horses can't keep a secret.
Exactly. Right. So that's where we got to with that.
And the one comedic take about Donald Trump that everyone was like, yep, that's the right one. We can all stop was the horse in the hospital from horse John Mulaney.
Yeah, that's right.
We just need things put into the shape of horses for the human brain.
It's probably dating back to when we used to equate car power with how many horses.
Horsepower, yeah.
Right. So
there's a lot of horsepower on that joke construction there.
It's so funny to come up with that metric when it was probably relevant and be using it in 2021. No one has any notion of how powerful a horse is.
No basis for comparison? Oh, 700 horses, you say.
Huh. It's so abstract.
Yeah, that seems like it would be a real clusterfuck if you tried to get 700 horses to pull something. They'd be going in different directions. What a mess.
Now, why would you just freaking people out with just the number of horses you're saying? The horsepower is like, I mean, you're getting about 400 horses here. Oh, boy. Who's going to shoe them? I don't know. Actually, I think I'll stick to the wagon.
Yeah. What is something you think is overrated, guy?
Oh, man. Flags. I don't know if it's because I haven't left New Zealand or people are just flying more of them, but I feel like so many people have got the New Zealand flag up at their house, and I just, whenever I see it, I always think, yeah.
You got it.
I know.
You got the right one.
I am also here.
Right.
It's happening. I mean, yeah, you guys love your flag. Yeah, actually, your flag has become something that it's a more complicated symbol than it was. But the graphic design, one thing that that cannot be taken away is you guys have a very good looking flag, I think.
Oh, that means a lot to me, guys.
Fucking whack.
Really? Mm. If you neuralized me Men in Black style
and took away any context,
I bet the American flag would be like top 10 flags in terms of like that's an objectively good looking flag.
Yeah, I think it's cool. We got a stinker.
I would probably be down with like the Mozambique flag because I just love that it has like an AK-47 and like a hoe on it and shit. And you're just like, oh yeah, let's go here. We off to Mozambique.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think but the flag thing, is that normal? Like, is like around Anzac Day, you know, your days of remembrance, do you fly a lot of flags and things like that?
The flag is, it's representative here the way it is, you know, in a lot of countries. But I just, you know, it's the sort of, it's the day-to-day sort of just flag flying
everywhere.
I always think, you know, I'm not getting that confused. But maybe some people are. Maybe, I assume it's mostly like old, wealthy people who need constant reminders of the country that they're in.
But is it tied to like sort of like how in America, if you see someone loaded up on flags, you're like, this is probably some kind of ethno-nationalist type person. Is it the same? Is it adjacent vibes? you're literally like, it's probably just an old, nice person.
It's not quite with the same vim and vigor.
Right.
Like if you see a lot of flags anywhere, I always think it's like, okay, this person feels strongly about things. But it's like our own sort of New Zealand version of it. It means that they're not totally chill, but they're still probably a bit chill.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's
looking at flags, Jack.
Yeah, I'm in the market for some flags. The O'Brien family crest flag, because that's another thing that you see. I used to see it a lot at like horse farms in Kentucky. Would be like people flying their like coat of arms flag.
Right,
I love that.
The O'Brien.
I love that the horses and the flags and the whole thing. It's all dovetailing together quite nicely.
Yeah, it's all coming together. And there's a lot of idiomatic flags: the red flag, the white flag, the checkered flag.
Yeah.
But there's the Jersey Shore, and even the part of the Jersey Shore that I go to that I tend to argue is not the one that you see on the MTV special. There's full of kind, you know, fine people from the Philadelphia area. But there are so many flags, and it's just American flag or Eagles, or it's almost always American flag or Eagles, the Philadelphia Eagles, NFL.
Oh, Eagles.
Eagles. And that's it. Like, it's just interesting that sometimes you can get to a point in a community where not having a flag says more, where it's like those people don't fly a flag. They're you know, conspicuously not flying the flag.
Yeah, keep your eye on them over there.
Yeah.
They don't have any allegiance to anything.
Yeah. Right. We believe in nothing. What is something you think is underrated, guy?
I got to tell you, we're all experiencing it right now. Underrated podcasting at 6:30 a.m. Right. I got a full moon out my window. There's not a single sign of daybreak. And when you were running through the topics we're going to cover in this episode, I thought, wow, I'm really going to wake up and get educated in real time.
Right. You ready to talk anti-Semitism in a second car at 6:30? Of a couple hours of sleep with our wicked accents?
Yeah. I'm ready.
Guy, the thing you have to understand about that's my impression of your impression of an American accent. Oh, guy.
Was that joke about podcasters or just American guys?
It was just American guys. Oh, it's okay, just guys. Right. American men know lots. And in New Zealand, we sort of downplay what we know. So if you know a lot about something and someone goes, do you know about this? You go, oh, a little bit.
Yeah.
And in America, if you say a little bit, then they're like, oh, well, don't worry. I'll educate you.
Right.
In New Zealand, there's like this mutual understanding that means that you sort of know enough that it's okay.
Yeah.
And so it took me a while to unlearn that part where it's like you have to broadcast information and confidence just so that you don't wind up being talked to.
Right.
Right. Yeah, you're just like at a frozen yogurt place in LA. And you're like, yeah, you know how this works? You're like, yeah, I think you just put the time. Here's the deal, guy. I'm just going to call you. I don't know if that's even your name. All right, guy, here's what you're going to do. You're going to get this cup and you're going to pull this lever like this, man. And then it's going to come out. Get it to the amount that you want it to. The thing is, they weigh it. So if you go too heavy on the froyo, you're going to be paying through the teeth for this stuff. And you're going to have to go light on the toppings.
Miles, you joke, but that is like, it's honestly what it is like as a tourist in America.
And then a 4-hour long Bubba Gump style recounting of every type of frozen yogurt flavor there is.
Yeah. Mango.
Now, that's if you're going pink berry. If you're going red mango, you got all, it's a whole different ball game, pal.
And then it evolves into you just tied up in a basement with like your eyes pried open, like you're in the fucking Ludovico treatment and fucking Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
I just asked if Sprite came out of this fountain. That's it. Right. Why am I bound to this chair?
I was being polite. I knew.
Oh, man. This guy. Hey, Brenda, this guy's never used one of the Coke machines. You can make it taste like anything.
Right.
Yeah, get the chloroform. We're going to have to educate this guy.
Get the chloroform.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
it's good to laugh.
It is good to laugh sometimes. Speaking of the full moon outside your window, is that flower moon?
No, we're getting a full blood moon tonight. And I was reading yesterday in the local newspaper. I'm visiting my folks in Arrowtown, New Zealand, birthplace of the world famous Arrow, which you guys might use.
the symbol or the tool,
you know them,
yeah,
they help you get places. This is prime viewing spot for the blood moon, which is there's a full lunar eclipse at 11 p.m. this evening. If I can stay awake that long, I'm very excited.
You're up getting in line for a good spot for that viewing, huh? 6:30. Wait, what's the flower moon? What was that thing you were talking about, Jack?
I think it's called like a flower blood moon. Like there's a convergence of moon
types
that make this one extra unique. That I just wish I knew more about moons so I could talk some New Zealander's ear off about them.
Don't feel too badly about it, man.
It's okay. It's not that interesting.
We haven't even got a guy there, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, man. I would love to talk to you about the moon race. The space
hold on.
Race.
Oh, wait. Hold on. You think we got to the moon? Yeah, Brenda.
Get the floor. Just wild eyed.
Get the lithium this time. Wait.
Get
lithium?
The lithium.
New lithium.
Oh, shit. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
And we're back. And now it turns out the right in America, the right wing in America, the conservative part of the country, Republicans, it's also like the mainstream media seems to be using the phrase anti-Semitism more than they were even during the Trump administration when people were going into synagogues and committing like the most deadly anti-Semitic attack of all time. It seems like now is a time when anti-Semitism has become a central tenet of the conversation in America.
The uptick in the anti-Semitic hate crimes that's come out of, you know, just the news of the conflict, or, you know, the attacks from Israel against Palestine, it's allowed a group of hateful people to sort of seize that moment to sort of begin using, like, to conflate on their own people being critical of the Israeli government with these people's hateful agenda of against Jewish people or the religion of Judaism. And yeah, like you're saying, you know, that this has been kind of the brand for the GOP is sort of turning a blind eye to anti-Semitic rhetoric, especially when it's coming from their side. Because you look at Marjorie Taylor Gestapo from the House, she recently made a comment of likening mask wearing, the mandated mask wearing, to like the Holocaust. And everyone was like, that is just the worst take. Stop saying stuff like this, especially what's happening right now with all this. Like, what are you doing? Most people came out pretty quickly to call it out. Whereas, you know, Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, took a very long time. And then finally, just this week, yesterday, said, oh, I totally disagree with her. That's so bad and wrong. You know what I mean? But then I'm thinking,
He had to do his own research, Miles. He had to do his own research, like the people on the right are always telling me to do.
I'm doing my own research, too. And I was remembering it was only in fucking February or the end of January when they tried to oust her from the House because of all the nonsense she was saying. This is, if you recall, she was doing things like during her campaign, posing with white supremacists and then refusing to announce them. Sharing videos where there's a Holocaust denier on saying that there's, quote, an unholy alliance of leftist capitalists and Zionist supremacists. They have schemed to promote immigration and miscegenation with the purpose of breeding us out of existence in our own homelands. That was someone, you know, she shared that video. She also approved. She said she was like behind, not behind, but supportive of a claim that the Israeli intelligence service assassinated JFK. And then, like, the Rothschilds were using, if you remember, lasers from space to set forest fires.
Yep.
And 199 of these Republicans voted to keep her in the House.
Right.
Yet now, because of, you know, I think because sort of the deference to the Israeli government has sort of just been the norm for mainstream politics on the left or the right, this is now sort of suddenly now this sort of stand against anti-Semitism is like the tack they're using to sort of protect the status quo. And it just smacks of such hypocrisy, given all of the things that's happened, even like you're saying with Trump and, you know, him calling the people at Charlottesville good people on both sides, even though they were saying things like Jews will not replace us.
Right.
That it's a real head scratcher now to see that this is part of them trying to gain some kind of moral high ground.
Yeah. It's interesting. Alan Dershowitz a month ago accused Bernie Sanders of being anti-Semitic for criticizing the Israeli government's policy towards Palestinian people. Bernie Sanders, who is a practicing Jewish politician, he's anti-Semitic, but Dershowitz is all on board with the party that is backing Marjorie Taylor Greene. It just kind of puts the lie to everything that they, I don't know, this line of argument that you can't criticize the Israeli government without being anti-Semitic.
But then you have people in the party who are like, George Soros and the people of his ilk, they're bloodsuckers. And you're like, what? I'm sorry, that is, you're not going to say anything about that? That is what, those are the seeds that they're sowing.
Right.
So it's really, and because I think, sadly, all forms of, you know, Islamophobia, transphobia, racism, anti-Semitism just become part of a brand where they are trying to like sort of court new voters. It's just becoming this, I don't know, it almost seems like just an easy thing for them to just keep doubling down on this rhetoric for more fringe voters.
Yeah. And Islamophobia is almost never talked about in the mainstream media as a problem.
Well, yeah, because these are sort of how especially American media and politics works, is they take a significant societal issue and they use it as a barb by acknowledging how dangerous it is.
Right.
Oh, this is anti-Semitism is so dangerous. But then what are they doing to actually address these things? If racism and police violence are dangerous things, what are the solutions to them? Because it's just always this disingenuous thing of like pointing to a problem, saying, yes, that's bad, but we're not going to do anything about it. And those little embers that they don't extinguish just turn into these gigantic, violent wildfires that we have to, you know, encounter in real physical space.
Right. All right. Let's talk about the Catholic Church. We always try and bring it up, you know, at least once every episode. The Catholic Church, the goat, you know, been doing it for the longest, just crushing it. But there's a piece of the New Republic about how there are priests doing exorcisms to help protect this good Christian land from critical race theory.
Essentially.
Yeah.
This is just a list of what people have been doing. In Portland, an archbishop led a procession into a public park where he conducted a Latin exorcism to dispel the evil spirits left by a racial justice activism who were there just in the name of social racial justice. A priest had to come be like, we got to get these bad vibes fucking out of here. The very same day in San Francisco, another archbishop did a similar rite at a site where they basically pulled down a father of Junipero Serra, who California kids know, like we were taught, he was the Spanish friar who came and, you know, helped the indigenous people convert to Christianity and created the missions and all the El Camino Real, or forcibly had these indigenous people convert to Christianity. So this man, and then also just the violence that was enacted on his behalf, but he was with like nuns praying the rosary, all again to purify this place. And we're seeing this kind of turn into many different avenues, like where, yes, there are even like there are people who are saying that things like intersectionality and Marxism and Black Lives Matter and critical race theory are like works of the devil. They're demonic and they need to be exorcised. And this is just sort of, I think, a wave of clergy that are just doing more than cheering on Donald Trump, which they didn't become too rare at that time because of his, you know, anti-abortion stance. But now these people are like weaponizing these religious rites to create this like moral high ground panic around these societal shifts to just keep the culture wars going.
Won't they be sectioning members of their churches further and further afield from like, I don't know what the future for traditional Christianity, whatever it is, but are these outliers within religion in America, or is this?
I mean, in the US, the Catholic Church has doesn't have a great record on progress, because you'll have things where, like, you know, Nancy Pelosi is like, I'm a good Catholic, and then her archbishop comes out with a wild take that's like completely like, you're like, whoa, no, that's not, I don't even think Jesus would have got down with that take right now. But I think it's because there is this really interesting thing about, especially with the Catholic Church in the United States. There was this book written by Father Brian Massengale, who's a Black priest. And he talks about how U.S. bishops, they were always condescending towards the civil rights activists. And the also thing within the Catholic Church in the United States, and I'm sure just everywhere, as we see, it's all sort of centered around like whiteness, like from the aesthetics to the music to the theology. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, they also look at racism as like an individual problem, like a bad habit versus a societal one where we're actually acknowledging sort of these systems of oppression. And because of that, it keeps the church from being able to have a really proper reckoning to even look at, you know, their own introduction of slavery into the United States or their history with segregation of Black students in schools or churches and things like that.
Right. The churches would just be clutching to whatever sort of reach and power they, you know, I can't imagine any church that's spearheaded by an old white guy is really going to take a look at itself in the mirror and readdress anything, you know.
I mean, I would say that like it's definitely different based on different churches and different priests, and like I've definitely seen Catholic priests who are very social justice minded and like really focused on like the unhoused community and like charity work, and
this is the traditional or the assumed, you know, this is what church is meant
what
to
you
represent.
Would think a right
yeah,
but then I do think that there is, because of the way, I mean, it kind of ties into what we were talking about up top, just the way that religion has been politicized and weaponized, and you know, it's just a cudgel used to fight these cultural battles in a lot of cases. And the one thing that where the U.S. Catholic Church, or just the Catholic Church in general, lines up to the right is the abortion debate. And so that is, I think, exploited a lot of the time by the right and, you know, certain Catholic bishops and certainly the Catholic Church has. I'm going to come out, guys. It's had its problems. It's not batting a thousand, I would say, in the 20th century.
What's wild, though, is like, you know, it's when misogyny and like whiteness are at the center, like it's going to have trouble shedding those habits just overall. I know, like, you know, there was in the 60s, there was like a brief blip where the Catholic Church almost went a little more progressive, but then that tightened very quickly back up. And I think this is all with the sort of background right now, too, where, you know, in the U.S., there's this thing, guy, the 1619 Project, which is written by this journalist, Nicole Hannah Jones. It's a Pulitzer Prize winning work of journalism, just looking at all the underpinnings and how systemic racism since the introduction of African slavery in this country still reverberates to this day, how it's everything is still connected and drawing very clear lines from that moment to where the situation we find ourselves now in the United States. Because of the clarity of this piece and the reporting, this entire project, conservatives do not want this taught because it is a unflinching look at the entire legacy of African slavery on the United States and how it built this country. And a lot of this is all because they just do not want to inform people. And that's what's really disheartening.
Yeah.
Is that it's part of a thing where, the U.S. has many reckonings that it has not experienced. But this one especially, like, we're going to the point where, you know, the Board of Trustees at North Carolina, she was meant to be in this tenured position. It's Republican controlled, this Board of Trustees, because it's appointed by politicians in the state. So because of that, they were able to take her tenure away. And it's caused a massive, massive controversy because, like, this goes against so many norms to do this.
But so it all is protection of power. I mean, which is what the church has been practicing since forever. And it's just like I feel like the political and, you know, the visibility of the political and religious lines and, you know, their shared desire to protect whatever limited power they have. And, like, I mean, it sounds like they're going to sideline themselves, but I guess there's a huge volume of people who prescribe these beliefs and will believe what they're told by these institutions.
What was like in New Zealand, right? You know, how is the sort of colonial history of New Zealand taught to, like, when you're younger? Like, how is the country dealt with those sort of origins?
Pretty poorly. And it's something that's changed. I mean, I haven't been in school for, I guess, 18 years or something now, but something that's changing in real time. And, like, even Māori, which is the tangata whenua, they're the people of the land, and Māori is our indigenous language. The school I went to, I wasn't, you know, you get taught the most, I'd say probably at Montessori, I was taught the most Māori I got taught in my life. And then in school, I wasn't really taught anything or, you know, the perspective of history as told by Māori and what happened when they came and got colonized. There is a slow tide change of, like, reckoning with that. And
has there been, like, just as a similar, I'd imagine, backlash to people wanting to, like, preserve this very sanitized view of, like, what it means to be
again the people with the flags on their front lawn are calling talkback radio, and they are in quite a tiz, but thankfully they don't articulate themselves with the same intensity outside of the four walls of their house. I mean, there's always pushback, but it's different.
Yeah,
and it's difficult to know because the people you surround yourselves with, and, you know, like, you don't know whether or not the part of the country or the world that you're living in is an echo chamber, and all of the stuff that you're talking about is not reflected beyond who you're with. But it does feel as though there's a genuine effort taking place to actually try and...
Yeah, and I think the people who want to have that effort understand the importance of understanding your history across the board to know where you come from and the things, the mistakes, the terrible decisions that were made along the way so they're not repeated. And it's just it's so disheartening to see that something as simple as, like, this all happened. And now your whole thing is, like, don't tell fucking anybody. Don't teach kids about this shit right now.
I can, to an extent, chart my own relationship along those lines of thought, because I remember at school, I sort of, you know, I'm a white guy in New Zealand who just, New Zealand history wasn't especially interesting to me, because I suppose because the ongoing ramifications of it were that they served me, and so I didn't feel inspired to learn about it. But then as time goes on, you know, you suddenly realize that they're very unhealthy foundations on which you're living your life, and you do want to tear it up and have a look. But it's there's a huge volume of people who would rather just keep the blinkers on and try and get to the end of their life without having to think that anything bad happened or that any of their ancestors caused any fucking carnage.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's pretty similar to how the United States education system works. And like you were saying, that the lie that you were taught is one that serves you. And so it's just, the lie is so much less interesting than the truth. And I feel like I would have been way more interested in history and literature. And if you had told me, look, you're living in like an unjust society that is built on these unjust events and structures. And I think if you trusted people to learn that at a young age, like that when they're sense of decency is intact, their, you know, insecurities aren't up. And I think that's why there's so much invested on blocking this from happening, coming from the right, to the point of making it illegal to teach. Nobody is arguing the facts. Like, they're trying to change the context in which they describe the facts, but they're trying to make it illegal to teach history.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, I just even think of, like, just as a kid, like, it took my dad and grandparents to teach me more about Black history than anything I learned in class, because they're like, what the fuck are they teaching you? They're like, no to everything you just said back to us. That's not, what a fucked up version of things. And it's funny because that actually drove my interest in history. That's what I ended up studying in college, because I was like, wait, hold on. It sort of grabbed me, saying like, they're purposefully not telling you everything for whatever reason, whether they think it's too much for a kid to understand or whatever. I just felt like there's this untapped wealth of information that is being kept from me that is so vital to know, because it also helps you understand the origin stories of cultures and things, and to know like which peoples came and what their impact was on a given nation's culture and things like that. And for the most part, you just sort of grow up thinking like, I don't know, Spain's like this, France is like this, England's like this, because that's what they are, rather than like, hold on, there's an entire history to actually understand, to know, and everything you see now can make sense if you can make sense of the history.
It's part of the sort of homogenized, like, clean lines of learning, where it's like that they don't want to teach you how complicated everything is, or you don't, like, I remember coming of age or becoming an adult and starting to find the world so complex and confusing, and the thing about like how it took me a moment to get my head around that. If I measure it against, like, you know, everything is just taught to the point of convenience, or it's a very pure drive to learn that you had there, because you identified something within the curriculum or within your school that you're like, this doesn't sit right, because what I'm actually being educated by the people I trust means that there's so much more that's not happening right now. Because I feel like, and maybe, you know, the school charters and the way that the curriculum is taught might be changing, but yeah, it's fascinating, really.
Yeah. If you told me at the outset of, like, the process of my education that we didn't have any of the answers, that, like, that we're still trying to figure this shit out, and it's an ongoing conversation, as opposed to the thing that always bored me the most about school was this idea that, well, yeah, so this is known. We know all of this. So it's actually not that interesting, because it's just like,
it's
this.
Finished.
Right. I thought science was this thing that we had figured out, and now it was over. And like, that's just it. And there's no real questions to answer that are worth anything. And the same thing with history at first, you know, that like, history is just these events. This is, the people were there. They told us this happened. And for the most part, that's how it happened. And it's, yeah, the actual mystery, if you just restored that to the conversation, like, It would be and so
then
much
you,
more
But then when you look at it enough, you just sort of see these patterns of human behavior just moving cyclically constantly, just with like new languages and borders and things like that. But like it in a way, when you look at it, you begin to really see just sort of what how humanity operates and how it chooses to protect its, you know, ideologies or self-perception. And I think that's what's interesting about knowing these things, because I'm sure if kids were taught about all of the things that were done to, you know, keep the institution of slavery and the lengths that people went, that you would see similar tensions now. Absolutely. And be like, oh my God, it's almost like we never handled this. It's because we haven't. But they don't want to teach kids that, because I think they also see that, you know, this fear for conservatives, like they go to colleges and they become these like leftists or whatever. It's like, dude, they're given new perspectives.
And the longer you protect that information, then the harder it comes for adults to reconcile, because it like totally destabilizes the world that they think they're living in. And so the greater the reluctance grows to educate yourself. And then that's how you wind up with these lizards who are like, nah, you can't teach that.
Right.
It would fuck me up. And so it would fuck anyone up.
Right.
You want to make the information that kids learn in college about like leftist values less powerful, teach it to them when they're young. Make it so that it's always there and available to them, instead of this secret information that's been hidden from them from day one, you know?
Yeah.
Like that. Right.
Same is true of LSD.
Right. Yeah. Just give the kids LSD, won't you?
Yeah, you got a bad trip when you're six, you probably won't be touching this stuff.
That's so true. All right, we'll be right back.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
And we are back. and the Olympics are almost here.
Oh my God.
Which is wild. I don't know. I guess there's usually like this impending media like cloud that seems to always be looking forward to the Olympics, and in America at least. I don't know if that's how it is in New Zealand, guy, but like the Winter Olympics, you realize it's happening once it's started and it's on TV and people are suddenly talking about it. But the Summer Olympics, I feel like, is always a big deal with like a lead up in the media and in the sports world.
Or that kind of
yeah.
Simone Biles, the greatest U.S. gymnast of all time, maybe the greatest gymnast of all time, has been like doing this routine on the vault that is like unprecedented. And that's really the only piece of mainstream news I've seen that like kind of crossed over into the zeitgeist where I would have been like, wait, why are we talking about gymnastics right. again? Oh, there's an Olympics coming. Holy shit.
I also realize how ignorant I am too with gymnastics, because like Simone Biles just does things so effortless. I'm like, okay, yeah, that looks normal. Right. And then I remember, I think it was like Franklin Leonard, past guest or someone, was like, can someone explain to me, like, I know this is historical, this double pike Yurchenko that she just busted, but like, I beyond just seeing that, looks like just some very cool shit. Well, and then someone's like, check out Mary Lou Retton's 1984 vault that got her a perfect 10 in 84. Right. And you'll see how much the game has changed. And then you watch the two and you're like, oh, okay, right.
She just came up, Mary Lou Retton just came up to the vault and then did a somersault underneath it. And that's what got her a perfect 10, which is my famous vault.
I think
routine.
It was the judge's first time seeing a gymnast. I think that was the first event. Oh, yeah. Wow. Pretty
good.
Whoa.
Holy shit.
There's an interesting thought experiment, though, that if you only watched Simone Biles, then you'd be like, God, wow. Incredible what all gymnasts can do.
right. And that is kind of how it is. That's the only thing that me, a non-gymnastics follower, like really sees, is the greatest like single acts of
yeah.
I'm sure that's true of like all sports, right?
I mean, it's like anything, right? Like someone might watch Jokic just land a weird shot and we're like, yo, that is difficult
right.
to even take a yeah. shot like that. Or people who play, you know, who think soccer is easy. Try trapping a ball that's coming from, you know, just yeah. 40 feet above your head and effortlessly just trapping the ball. There are so many little skills that like, yeah, that are born out of ignorance. That's why I'm just trying, especially with Simone Biles, to inform myself so I can truly appreciate just how next level this shit is.
What you're talking about is very exciting to me, Miles. Hopefully there's some sort of large scale international platform where the best athletes from every country can represent themselves and show us these different skills.
Well, guy, you are in luck, friend.
Because yeah. Japan, Tokyo 2020, even though it's 2021.
That's my favorite thing about these Olympics. Yeah. It's like they think that no one is going to remember COVID. Like when we yeah. look back on this, we're like, that's right. Those went ahead in 2020.
Those games are going to be asterisked to hell. You know what I mean? Like when you look at do people still look at almanacs like I used to when I was playing in San Diego? But the whole thing with this is like right now, Tokyo is in terrible shape. Japan is in awful shape in terms of the COVID situation. The vaccinations have like stalled out. Less than 5% of people have their first shot. Major metropolitan areas have declared states of emergency. The Osaka hospital system, they said, is completely under strain, if not like on the just brink of disaster because of the amount of people that are having to be admitted. And the United States government is even telling Americans, like, don't even think about taking a trip to Japan right now. Don't even try it. Even though, we're probably the worst place on earth to go a few months ago. But don't even think about going there.
Is that to Americans or American athletes?
To Americans. Now the United States Olympics and like Paralympics Committee has said,
don't even think about not going to.
Yeah, exactly. Simone Biles, you better get your ass on that plane,
right?
Because we got work to do. But yeah, the people are representing the athletes believe that it's going to be a perfect bubble, no problem at all. Don't even worry about it. Meanwhile, the polling shows that even the people of Japan look. On the other side of this, prior to it, I spoke to friends and family in Japan. They were like, oh, the Olympics are coming. That'll be fun because, again, any opportunity for nationalism, Japanese people love, you know what I mean? I think like most countries. But, you know, for Japan, there's like certain sports where we really excel. So this felt like a good moment. Now, 80% of the people in Japan are against hosting the Olympics this year. 40% want a postponement. 43% want a complete cancellation.
Yeah.
So, you know, but since a lot of money's been made, what, are we going to reprint these t-shirts? No.
The t-shirts
they printed
become
2020.
The t-shirts become more valuable.
Yeah.
Right.
You can, I would love if these got canceled to get my hands on some Tokyo 2020 merch. That is a hot games. Ticket.
Right.
Who spearheads a cancellation? Is it the IOC? Is it the Japanese government? Like, how would that actually function?
That would have to come from the IOC because the Japanese government has not put up any resistance to the games. So it's going to take the executives for the IOC to wonder, is this worth it? I don't know. I don't know what their calculus is. It probably does have to do with the amount of fucking merchandise that's probably been produced with the numbers 2020 on it or some shit. But I don't know. Like, I mean, I would be interesting though too to see how many athletes, if any, refuse to participate. They're like, yo, this is just reckless. I'm sorry. This is just, this seems so reckless. It's, I don't know if you want, I mean, you want me to put myself at risk and other people like, no, I'm off this.
The athletic cycle of an Olympic athlete is so,
yeah,
like they've got such a limited amount of opportunity to be the best at what they do. And also so many of the sports that take place at the Olympics are just so, you know, like they're not, there's not a light on the shone on them in the 3 years in between every ceremony.
Their careers have the life cycle of a cicada. It's like you get this one chance to come out every 4 years.
Exactly. And so, I mean, I can understand purely from an athletic perspective how some of these people are like, God damn, I've been working so hard for this. I just want to go to the Olympics once. Like, I might be there one opportunity.
Yeah.
And then, but you, I mean, I feel like it's ridiculous that it's happening. And it sounds like, yeah, money drives it. And if it's going to go ahead, then an athlete's going to be like, well, I have worked towards this. They're putting it on. I'm not going to not go.
Right.
And then it's a similar thing happened. I don't know if you guys, you almost definitely don't. The IPL, the Indian Premier League, it's a T20 cricket tournament that is the most expensive in cricket. It takes place every year in India.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in the face of what was ostensibly looked like the worst COVID-19 crisis that had happened across all of the pandemic, was raging through India. And then they created this biosecure bubble and, like, you know, millions, if not billions of dollars are being spent creating this league. And they're playing cricket and what is a biosecure bubble, and then like it's so incongruous with the news you're reading about what's happening in India.
Yeah.
And then about halfway into the tournament there was a biosecure bubble breach, and all of a sudden that highly contagious strain of COVID is ripping through the players, and then all of them are panicking and trying to get charter flights out of the country. And, you know, I mean, the India, it didn't have the facilities to, you know, take care of its citizens, the people who live there. And I just can't help but feel like you're going to see. I mean, and I don't know if the IOC pay attention to that. They must have, because it's the only other massive multinational sports league that's trying to take place in the middle of a hotspot. But
it
is a very damning warning and advertisement for what is almost inevitably going to happen if these games go ahead.
I don't know what you can do to prevent that. I mean, I think in their mind, they'll be like, forget that example. What about the NBA bubble? That worked, huh? And they're like, well, don't, that's not, hold on. So you're selectively picking anecdotal evidence to justify this?
Why, Miles, is the number of vaccinated people stalling at under 5%? Is there opposition to, like, getting vaccines, or?
I think it's just the distribution
not
happening as efficiently as it can. But I think getting it available has been the hardest part.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, staying on sports, in American sports over the weekend, it was kind of a surreal experience where suddenly fans were back. Like, the NBA playoffs kicked off over last weekend, and Madison Square Garden in New York City, where the New York Knicks play, was packed to the gills with people like screaming and shouting and not masked up and packed to the mane. Sorry, not the gills.
Yeah, I was going to say. And real horse's ass on that one.
There was a golf major, and it went from there not being anyone on these courses like watching the tournament to like an unprecedentedly drunk and like out of control crowd, just like crowding the players and like pouring onto the course. Like, I don't know. My dad watches these. I don't watch them. My parents are staying with us, and that he was like, I've never seen anything like this. They were like running up to the guy as he was like about to win the tournament, like patting him on the back and like grabbing him and shit. And he was like, what is happening? But it's, I don't know. It's surreal to see that many people in that small space in a world where we know that the U.S. is not really doing like strict vaccine passport, like vaccination passport. Mm. You know, the New York Knicks and the New York Nets, Brooklyn Nets, who also had full attendance or almost full attendance. They said that there was like 90% vaccination, but I don't think they're like checking people's paperwork. Yeah. Maybe they are, but
I mean, maybe some level. I don't know. Yeah. I'm trying to go to game three on Thursday.
Of the Lakers.
Yeah.
The Lakers?
Yeah. So we'll see. I know they just say pull up with your vax paperwork or whatever, and or like a negative PCR test from within 72 hours. But we'll see, you know.
But I guess they are. Yeah. But
it's just but there is this energy though to the like the Madison Square Garden game. I could not believe what I was seeing. I think it's a combination of things. It's that the Knicks are in the postseason again, right. I think, for right. starters, mixed with just the post-vax world that we find ourselves in. But yeah, it's I mean, people are able to switch it up real quick. I'm like just now being like a little bit more like, yeah, fuck it, baby. I'm feeling safer ish.
Yeah. I mean, I flew back east over the weekend and everything is like fully masked up. And like, you know, when you're inside the airport, when you're on the plane, like you have to be wearing a mask the whole time. Still, somebody ordered like two drinks in a row and the flight attendant was like, why don't we take a break? Because you need to put your mask back on because you've had it off, like having this drink for like 5 minutes.
Hey, maybe I need
straight.
Another one.
I think that was also at play.
But the situation's so bad on airplanes. I'm surprised you didn't see some shit go down. Because didn't a flight attendant get her, I don't know if it was a flight attendant got their teeth knocked out on a flight recently.
But that
people
is.
People are so out of pocket.
But they're still like making everybody wear their masks. You know, I didn't. I had a, you know, a fake thing covering it.
Conscientious objector card that I held up.
Sir, it is my right.
All right, get off, asshole. Get this asshole off. He's saying some kind of body provenance weird. I don't know what the fuck he's talking about.
But it's just funny that the place that they are letting people like finally experience the being in public without a mask is like this just most unhinged like emotional environment where like it's encouraged to just lose your mind on the refs and the opposing players. Like the Knicks game, they were like chanting swears at like this young
Trae Young,
this guy who's like really good player, young
and he
kid
him.
Yeah, and he did tell them to shut
guy,
the fuck
what's
up
it been like for you winning. Man, because I know you've been really quiet during this whole section because probably because you haven't I know New Zealand's in a bad place, you guys haven't had crowds in a minute, so this probably sounds like found fantasy talk.
Yeah,
to you.
Yeah, we can only dream. I mean, yeah, we've had crowds at sports games since I feel like maybe July or August last year, and the plan was to it was elimination. It means that, you know,
right.
Watching these American sports games and stuff, and you see people like all these people who are clearly pissed up and packed in close proximity to people who presumably they didn't come to the game with. With a mask hanging around their chin or right. off an ear or like holding it to gesticulate.
Just waving germs everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah. We didn't, no one's wearing masks at the stadiums because the only, like you have to wear masks on public transport. You have to wear masks on airplanes, but in the airport, you're not wearing a mask. Like I don't actually know what the functionality of it is. And you know, it seems crazy to me that you wouldn't wear one all the way through the airport if you've got this sort of right. idea, but
just on the plane.
Yeah, but so no, I mean, we've started playing, there was a Super Rugby Aotearoa competition, which was like just within national borders. There are five franchises who play rugby against each other. And then in the last 2 weeks, we've got an open travel bubble with Australia now. So quarantine-free travel between the two countries, and we've started playing Super Rugby Australasia, I think is what it's called, or whatever, and now we're playing international matches, and you're watching sports games in Australia where, again, people aren't wearing masks. But, it's like going to a sports game was one of the first things I did when we got let out of lockdown, and it was like the sense of, I can viscerally remember the intensity and the relief and the excitement and just, you know, being in a crowd, and all of that emboldened and underscored by the fact that we knew that we had isolated, like that, you know, we had eliminated COVID-19, and so
yeah,
the consequence was not there. But I think it's just too, your guys' experience of it and your relationship to it is so different. I can't imagine right. how difficult it would be to go to an NBA game if you're in New York and you support the Knicks and you're at Madison Square Garden for the first time, what, 10 years or something, and you've just gotten out of your house for the first time in 2 years,
right.
and you got to remember to fucking keep a mask over your mouth.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Trae Young probably can't hear you. The only way that you're going to get through to him is if you can read your lips.
Yeah.
right. Yeah.
It's the assumed responsibility keeps getting passed down to the individual. Like, yeah. it's,
yeah, the same thing with just like with the CDC's bizarre like mask mandates. We're like, I don't, yeah, if you should, well, actually, I don't know. Maybe if, well, how old's your kid? And it's like, yeah, wait, yeah. what are the fucking rules? What the fuck? Right. Y'all are the, oh, forget it. Essentially, as a way to let businesses put it on businesses now to say, that's on you to decide, because we don't want to be the boogie person anymore for the Chamber yeah. of Commerce, who is allowed, like, these politicians are allowing them to put more pressure on us and the other people who are trying to do right by this pandemic.
Yeah. yeah.
And also just box office continues to be, you know, it's not fully there, but it does seem like the people who are releasing movies are getting a better return than, like, The Wrath of Man, Jason Statham's new movie, is going to be the best performing Jason Statham movie to date, despite being like almost indistinguishable from other Jason Statham movies to a non-Statham head.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit by while you poo-poo the filmography of the great Jason Statham.
but like the you couldn't get, I could not tell you the difference between The Wrath of Man and The Mechanic 2. Like in terms
the Mechanic
of
Mechanic 2?
Yeah.
Oh no.
Well, one of them's a sequel for a start.
Yeah, my bad. But it's just, I feel like studios are probably realizing that they're leaving money on the table if they're continuing to not release movies. Like, there's just no competition, so you can really, like, do well. Mm. And Demon Slayer is continuing to. It's now made $45 million in America alone and is the biggest movie ever in Japan with $400 million. And it's the biggest grossing movie of 2020.
Wait till Fast 9 comes out, Jack.
Yeah.
Then we'll start seeing. You know what I mean? Because the family, man, when your family, or whatever the fuck that line, what is it? Olive, when you're here, your family. Maybe that's yeah. Olive Garden, not Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
But it's, I'm,
the two share first. Remarkable thematic yeah. similarities.
It does. Like the energy around that Fast and Furious movie, though, is kind of funny to see. Like, even though it seems jokey, but this does feel like a good time for a movie like that to come out in the U.S. for at least the people who want to be safe and go to a theater. But yeah.
Yeah.
And
maybe
in New Zealand, they've been playing. I'm sure they're doing it in America, too. You can go to the cinema and watch all the Fast films at the moment. They're just rolling them out.
Oh, really?
It's so cool. Yeah,
They haven't done that. That sounds great. That's a great idea.
Damn it.
Because you can't really understand
America.
Yeah, you can't understand F9 if you haven't recently taken an F1 through 8.
Do I need to know the past material to understand this installment? Yes, idiot. What do you think you're gonna make sense of a flying car and from the fucking sky? No.
Yeah,
it was a light crescendo to this point.
It's less about the flying car and more about the relationships between the people in the car.
In the flying cars.
right. Oh, see, you're hung up on the car part and in the air. What about the air between the characters and what's contained within?
And if people watch 1 through 8 and have questions about why someone who always talks about family, the Vin Diesel character who's obsessed with family, never mentioned his brother before this one. Mm. Yeah. You know.
Oh, he has a brother in this one?
Yeah, bro. John Cena. He should have mentioned his brother is John Cena. That's a fucking big deal.
That's an interesting casting decision. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Anyways, Guy, is F9 out in New Zealand?
No, not yet.
Are you just treating New Zealand like a fantasy world? Like, is Fast and Furious 10 already out there? Oh, man. And there's no COVID. That's cool.
Although it's probably not as big a deal to have flying cars there since you actually have flying cars in New Zealand, right? Mm.
We do.
And the horsepower on them is something
unfathomable.
Guy, as always, such a pleasure having you. Where can people find you and follow you?
You can find me at Guy_Mont on Twitter and on Instagram. Two social media platforms I wish I could leave, but cannot yet bring myself to. That's where you can find me.
Nice. Is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
Oh, yeah. There was a tweet that really cracked me up. It was from a few days ago, but I knew this was coming up, so I saved it. I'm just getting it up. It was by an account called, I don't know who this guy is, Jonathan Haynes, at Jonathan Haynes. And he's just written, what an excellent 5 paragraphs. And it's a screen cap of a BBC News Entertainment article. And the screen cap reads, Coldplay's Chris Martin says that the pandemic has forced him to reassess his relationship with fame. And I quote, last year was quite an eye-opener, he told BBC Radio 2. I was like, who am I without Wembley Stadium saying, you're awesome? I'm trying in my life right now to not attach too much to being a pop star. I'm trying not to get my self-worth from external validation, end quote. He was speaking as Coldplay unveiled their new single, Higher Power. They premiered the 80s-inspired pop song on board the International Space Station overnight, teaming up with French astronaut Thomas Pesquet, who beamed the music back to Earth by satellite.
Oh, my God. How is that not? Oh, that's so brilliant.
It was just like the most perfect satire piece of, you know, satire, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
But it's real.
Straight up Spinal Tap. Miles, where can people find you? What's a tweet you've been enjoying?
Twitter, Instagram, Miles of Gray. Also twitch.tv/420dayfiance. Some tweets that I like. Oh boy. Let's see. This one is from @HeyMandoK. Tweeting, LOL, Joe Biden hasn't forgiven a cent of my student loans and he's emailing me for cash. Nice try, buddy. Another one is from Toby Herman at TobyHerman27. It's like a 4-pane sort of picks, you know, 4 picks. You got Leonardo DiCaprio in a tuxedo vaping, Leonardo DiCaprio on a yacht vaping. And then the other side, we have Kate Winslet in Mayor of Easttown vaping in two different scenes. And it just says, near, far, wherever you are. Just so hitting these vapes so fucking hard. Yeah. And then one last one is from past guest Greg Edwards at Greg the Grouch. He tweeted, do they have O'Doul's for mushrooms?
Yeah.
Stupid.
You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. Tim Barnes at TimBarnes451 tweeted, this summer I'll be walking around shirtless in New York with a boombox blasting podcasts. And then I had another screen cap, like guys that I wanted to read, if you'll indulge me. Robert Moore tweeted, wait, hold on, what? And tweeted a screen cap from Book Forum. When Einstein died in 1955, his brain was removed during an unsanctioned autopsy at a hospital in Princeton. Later at the University of Pennsylvania, a pathologist named Thomas Stoltz Harvey sliced it up for research purposes, but kept some of the slivers for himself. In 1988, Harvey, who'd since been stripped of his medical license, moved to Lawrence, home of the University of Kansas, where he presented one of the slivers to local author William S. Burroughs, after whose death in 1997, it passed into the possession of, I'm going to stop now because I don't want to get anyone in trouble. Let's just say that when I was in Lawrence teaching at KU, this was a thing that still happened, a hazing that was also an homage. You scooped the bit of Einstein's brain out of the jar and shook off the excess formaldehyde. Then you put some salt in the crook of your thumb and licked it, after which you took down a shot of cheap room temperature tequila and sucked on the brain bit until your mouth went numb, until the formaldehyde paralyzed your lips and tongue, and you couldn't be understood. You couldn't even feel yourself trying to make language. That's a real thing that is happening as we speak, presumably in Kansas. They're sucking on a chunk of Einstein's brain and getting high off formaldehyde. The world is a very weird place.
So fucked up, and I don't even want to think of the cool.
Same time, I wouldn't. I mean, I would totally write that into my will if I thought people would actually suck on my brain, because who knows, you know?
Sounds like an incredible high.
Right.
I mean, and also, you're probably, God, can you imagine the insufferable asshole who just came off of a Einstein brain bender?
Oh,
and
he's
like,
gosh.
Dude, you don't even know. Like, yeah. The shit I'm understanding now, it's like microdosing. Like, you haven't done it. Like, I don't even know how to explain it to you.
Anyways, you can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes. Where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, what song should people check out today?
I'm just still thinking of the process of that shot. You put some salt right here on your thumb.
Right.
You lick it. You do a shot. And then you're sucking on the brain matter.
Instead of the lime.
But then that piece goes back in the formaldehyde?
Yeah, bro. I mean, it's not going to get... You're not going to get anybody else's germs.
It's just
the
so
formaldehyde's going to kill that.
I'm just thinking of like the structural integrity of that little sliver of gray matter. You know what I mean?
Right.
How many suckings can it handle before it starts turning to gravy in your mouth?
We're talking about freaking Albert Einstein's brain, Miles. I think it's pretty strong.
Do you imagine? I'm like hell-bent. I'm like, Jack, I'm leaving the show to try and become a biology person at KU. I'm going to chew on that motherfucking brain. I'm going to find out.
But it is such like fourth grade logic that these like the people at the height of whatever their academic pursuits are engaging in.
Anyway, alcohol. The song. What else? The song we ride out on. This is going to be a track by Dirty Art Club. I've done a few tracks by Dirty Art Club before, but this one is called Videotape. And this whole album is called FMTI. It's a very it's like spooky background music, because it's not just quite like cheesy, you know, like sort of Muzak that would just be playing. There's good curation and production around it and giving a little more vintage sound, so it's like a very familiar, it feels like sort of if DJ Shadow took it easy on like the hardness of the beats and stuff and just gave you a little something that he was sampling from, but still with some funk. So check this out, Videotape by Dirty Art Club.
All right, go check that out. The Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. We're back this afternoon to tell you what's trending, and we'll talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. you can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.